of southwest Louisiana until around 8 p.m. This evening, a 20% chance of showers, partly cloudy with a low of 43, and on Tuesday, a sunny day with a high of 61. Currently, it's 66 and cloudy, drizzling here on the campus of UL Lafayette. Coming up at 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. We're going to start this hour by going into the interview studio with Judith Merriweather.
And joining me by telephone from Los Angeles is musician, composer, and arranger Gordon Goodwin. He is an arranger of music in jazz, TV, and film scores, and he will be in Lafayette at UL Lafayette March 1st and 2nd to do some clinics and a concert that is open to the general public. And we were just chatting a bit before, Gordon. I was telling you how excited people already are that you're coming here. They know your music, and a lot of that has to do with, of course, we have a great jazz program here, but just young people passing around music on social media and sharing videos, and it's such a wonderful way to get your message and your music out there.
It really gives you hope, though, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
To see young kids that are, voraciously enthusiastic about music of content.
Mm-hmm. That's what a good
clearly,
way to put that, music
yeah,
of content.
You see, most of the culture you see embracing music that maybe doesn't have the same values that some of us do. And yet there's a multitude of kids at the high school and college level that are really keeping this music alive, and it's key to the future of it, really. For these kids, maybe they're not going to grow up to be professional musicians, but they'll always have that, they'll be supporters of the music. They'll buy it, they'll go to the concerts. And so for any jazz or classical musician, I mean, it just behooves you to, stay actively involved, in this, especially at a time now where, arts and programs in the schools are being decimated.
Yes.
So there's a growing void, and I think the artistic community needs to step up into that void.
Right. We're very fortunate here to have some great, great band programs in the high schools. I know a number of students listen at this time, as well as their parents, and we know that they're planning to attend, and they're very energetic and active, and of course many of them have come to UL to be in the music program, whether it's the jazz studies, music media program, so quite an active music program, and it does give us a lot of hope here as well. And as you said, just for personal enrichment later on, keeping up with music.
And not only not only appreciation for the arts, which is great, because if jazz disappeared tomorrow, now I'd hate it, but I'd go on. Life would go on. So it's not like we need people that understand jazz, but what we do need is people that know how to think, and people that know how to problem solve, and people that know how to see between the lines of issues, and that's what music teaches kids.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
And the fact that is not something that's well understood by a lot of the school boards in this country is just such a mystery to me. It's not like it's new information. We've known that for a while, and I think that is maybe the greatest loss to to especially a young developing mind to be able to be exposed to music that can have those great effects. But
right.
But for me, I came out of programs just like the one you have going there.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I hear you say, well, all these kids are excited about your music and about you coming, it's still a little bit surreal because I feel like I was just there. I was them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's because when my band, the Big Fat Band, we do a lot of concerts, for high school kids and college kids. And I look out there in the audience and see them watching this, and I just remember myself at a Woody Herman or a Buddy Rich concert. Or a Count Basie concert, I went to a summer camp run by Stan Kenton, and I sat there in front of the Kenton band, 3 feet away from that band every night. And I it's such a vivid memory. So for us to be a part, of that chain, it's pretty gratifying.
Mm. And in addition to just inspiring these kids emotionally, personally, musically, just your presence here when you're talking about school boards and officials, your presence here makes a big difference. For our audience who may not be completely familiar with your music, you have been nominated for countless Grammys and Emmys and have won awards.
Well,
and
you could probably count them if you...
Well...
It wouldn't take that long to count them.
I don't have that many fingers. They're quite a number. But that makes a big difference, you taking time out of your schedule, touring and composing. I mean, you have, what, almost 200 jazz ensemble publications, enormous. And so to take that time sends a message, and it's a big message, and we're very grateful for your time here.
Thank you. Well, the essence of that message, though, and I've maybe as I've matured, I've come to gain an appreciation for it, of what a gift it is to have a life in music. It's just unbelievable, especially, you know, we all could probably have a fairly healthy list of people we know who go to jobs that they just endure so they can get to the weekend. That you know, they have a responsibility to support their family or to pay their rent or whatever the case is, and they're not doing what they love. And me, on my worst day, I get to play and write music. Even when I have an assignment here in Los Angeles, writing for a stupid TV program or film or something that I'm not even writing music that I like, but that because that's what the director wants. Even on that day, how bad is that? It's completely amazing to me that I was so fortunate that that's my life. And you know, it keeps you young.
Music keeps you young.
It does take a little bit of faith and confidence, because as a freelance, you know, musician, you don't really know when your next gig's coming in. You just have to know that if you stay in the game and you know, that job is going to come in. And I've been, once again, very lucky that I've been diversified enough that I've rarely been very bored. So, but I think that's one thing that I try to impart to kids, because, you know, when you're a kid, you don't really maybe take the long view of, you just kind of assume this is the way it is. I get to play music. Mm-hmm. My parents pay for my lessons. Mm-hmm. I have a program at school. I mean, I've seen music programs at schools go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've seen institutions like Tower Records. I used to spend every weekend there when I was in college. It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Recording studios in Los Angeles, like, they have these big sound stages where we record all the film music. There was a big one called Todd AO, just a beautiful state-of-the-art studio. It's gone. They turned it into reality television secretarial space. And so the economics can run rampant, I mean, just like it's doing, you know, to the arts programs in schools right now. So I guess you learn that to appreciate what you have, you know, when you have it.
Yeah, nurture it, cultivate it. And you make a good point, too, about, you know, if you're just a musician waiting for the next gig, can be a little uncertain. But it's important to learn to compose, arrange, do other things with music in addition to just simply playing it, which, of course, is a wonderful, enriching thing. But obviously that helps so much more.
It does. And being having a wide set of skills enables you to be flexible when the business does change.
Mm-hmm.
So you're, especially now with technology, you know, when I started writing music, it was me, a pencil, and a piece of paper, and a piano. And now I'm sitting here talking to you in a studio full of computers and samplers and all this technology. I spent a lot of time trying to get the technology to work, which is not really my favorite part of the day, because I'd rather be playing or writing music instead of, you know, looking at manuals and installing software and you know, it just takes that kind of maintenance to keep it going. So,
okay.
But I'm glad I have the skill set. Yes. I'm glad I was able to adapt.
Right. And I think the younger students are much more comfortable with that. You know, we have, again, I mentioned a music media program here, and they're very comfortable with computers, and it's just their tools, and they're learning how to use it. I do want to tell people who may just be tuning into us right now that with me by telephone from Los Angeles is musician, composer, and arranger Gordon Goodwin, multi-award winner. He will be with us here in Lafayette March 1st and 2nd, giving clinics to college and high school aged musicians, and then giving a concert with the UL Jazz Ensemble March 2nd. That's a Saturday in Angel Hall. Well, tell us just a bit about how you developed your interest in music, particularly jazz, and wanting to write jazz.
I was fortunate that I had, my parents forced me to take two things. They forced me to take swimming lessons and be on a swim team, which I hated, and I wasn't good at it. They also forced me to take piano lessons when I was in kindergarten. Hated that too, but I had a piano teacher who recognized she needed to figure out a way to keep me engaged, and I'm not sure how she knew this, but she said, tell you what, if you practice your scales, like I've asked, then I will let you write your own song. And I thought, well, what do I want to do that for? But she kept saying that, And I guess as a kindergarten kid, maybe I do want to do that. So I wrote a little four-bar, I don't know what it was. It was pretty terrible. She goes, okay, great. Now, next week, if you can play your F major scale, I will let you write a waltz. Now, I didn't know what a waltz was, but she told me. It's in 3/4 time, you know, and here's what it's like. And so I wrote a little eight-bar waltz. Now, I wasn't a little Mozart. But I was, at an early age, I started to kind of get the idea, well, maybe I can kind of create my own music. So she would have me do a different, like, it'd be a march one week, and it'd be a polka the next week. And so it was really an amazing thing that she did. And then from there, I saw the Walt Disney movie, The Jungle Book, which had a lot of jazz in it. And I heard that music, and I thought, wow, that's really... I don't know if it was a combination of the music and the bright colors of the animation or something as a little elementary school kid. That appealed to me. And then the next thing was probably when I was in seventh grade, and I had started to write little pieces for the piano and whatnot, and I heard Count Basie's band, my band director, played it for me. He said, you need to listen to this. And it changed my life. I heard this piece written by a composer named Sammy Nestico, and I remember where I was when I heard this music, and right then in seventh grade, I go, that is what I want to do. It almost felt like a past life experience.
Well, and thanks
whatever
to
that means. Yeah. And I said, wow. And of course now, you know, I could hang the phone up from you and call Sammy, and we're friends now. And that is what it's been so gratifying that I've been able to express to him probably more times than he wants to hear how he changed my life as a kid and showed me what I wanted to do. That's what I want to do, big band music, and I want to compose it and perform it.
Well, there's going to be a kid in the audience on March 1st or 2nd who's going to have the same experience and be calling you up 2 decades from now, telling you over and over again.
I'll take the call.
Yeah. So what a wonderful teacher to, I guess, with that Tom Sawyer-like way of leading you on, making you think that this was a wonderful thing to do. And there you were, just composing all kinds of different styles of music. But obviously jazz, you fell in love with that, big band sounds of jazz, and you have your own big band jazz group now called the Big Fat Band. How did that develop?
It developed, we've been in existence about 12 years, which is amazing for me to even say. I can't believe it's been 12 years, but I decided to do it at a relatively late point in my career. I mean, I was established pretty well here in town. I was writing animation music for Warner Brothers. Great gig. You know, we had full orchestras. We were scoring all the cartoons like Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain and that stuff. And we were winning Emmy Awards, and just it was a golden era. And yet, I realized that it wasn't me. Mm-hmm. It was me doing my imitation of Carl Stalling, who was the legendary Warner Brothers composer,
right,
that did all the Bugs Bunny music.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted. Mm-hmm. They used to tell me all the time, okay, it's great, but a little less Gordon Goodwin, a little more Carl Stalling, please, you know. So... as gratifying as that job was, it wasn't me. And then I at one point, you know, you kind of wake up and you say, maybe I have more road behind me than I do ahead of me. And what should I be spending my time at doing? What do I have? I'm just going from gig to gig, from film to film, or, you know, I was working a lot for the Walt Disney Company doing parades and attractions. All great stuff, but not me. So I kind of went home to the big band world, and I called a bunch of friends, and we went in the studio just to document some music I'd written. And I thought, maybe I'll try to get a record deal, or maybe I'll just play it for myself, or I didn't know. And I was lucky to get come in contact with a record company called Emergent Records, and they loved the music, even though they realized that they were going to probably lose a lot of money on it, as we all do routinely. And then one thing led to another. All of a sudden, we're doing gigs. And then now I'm talking to you and today, and the Big Fat Band is well over 50% of my day, and unfortunately, it's not a revenue neutral proposition. I mean, we all lose money to keep this music alive.
Well, I think people can hear the passion you have for it, and the fact that you just—it's not something you could stop. And you must have gathered around you an amazing group who have that same passion and love for jazz and your compositions.
That's a large part of it, because they all. Like me, came out of a school system and fell in love with jazz at around middle school age, high school age. And even though they're making a living playing on TV shows and films and things, they recognize that they still need to nurture their creative side. And so the Fat Band has been an outlet for that for them. And it's a great source of pride for me that they're willing to... I mean, we're going to Japan in a couple weeks. And like three of the guys play on Dancing with the Stars, and, you know, they're taking it off.
Mm-hmm.
To go to Japan, they'd make more in one day on that show than we're paying them for the whole week.
But to play in the kind of band you're offering and to play that kind of music means so much to them.
It's meaningful mm-hmm. to them, and I think that's maybe another lesson that, you know, that we've picked up, is that it's not just about money. I love the money. I need the money. We all do, but... I also, you know, you need to feel good about what you're doing every day. And so for me, it's kind of a balance between, you know, music I write for pay, music I write for the love.
Feeding your musical soul. Again, my guest from Los Angeles, musician, composer, arranger, Gordon Goodwin. He will be in Lafayette at UL Lafayette Friday, March 1st and Saturday, March 2nd. There will be a public concert in the evening on March 2nd. He will be working with the high school jazz bands and, of course, the UL Jazz Ensemble here at the university. And Gordon, how do you go about working with kids? Is that something you started since you started the Big Fat Band, or had you always been doing clinics for young musicians?
I think it increased to a great degree once the band started. Mm-hmm. I've been active in the publishing field for pretty much my whole career, but not aggressively. I would write two or three charts a year and give them to a publisher, and they would go out, you know, into the environment there. But once we started the band, I made a marketing decision, which was to brand the band, the charts, and the records together. So in other words, if we're selling a piece of sheet music, on that sheet music, there's the band logo, and it's now you can hear this music on this record. And then also, when the records would come out, it would say, do you like these charts? You can click here, you know, to purchase the charts, so that I could use the record company resources and the publisher's resources together to try to sell both of those things. And I've learned a lot about marketing and sales as I've tried to sell this music that's hard to sell. Mm-hmm. But it's gratifying for me to have people, especially non-music people, that hear the band and go, wow, I didn't know I liked jazz. That's jazz. Wow. Mm-hmm. We do get that for a fair amount. So in any event, since we started the band, it did tend to catch on with young kids. And matter of fact, one of the things that happens a lot is I get band directors that'll say, you know, my kids told me about your band, so I checked you out, and you know, so it seems like the high school kids, especially, are early adapters.
Yes, absolutely, and they can adapt so easily and quickly and widespread these days. So yes, that's been happening here as well, and we're all glad that we know about you because the young people love your music so much. Again, there will be a public concert on Saturday, March 2nd with Gordon Goodwin and the UL Jazz Ensemble. Will you be playing with them, Gordon, or conducting, or how will you work? Are you going to play piano with them? Or?
I'm going to play a little of everything. Mm-hmm. I play saxophone and piano, and but one of the things that I really make an effort to do when I come into a school is I don't want to just come in and stand in front of the band and do everything. I want to interact with the kids and make sure that they get an equal footing, you know, in the concert. Because I don't want to just come in and knock, you know, the piano player off the bench the whole time. So a lot of times we'll sit there, or if there's another keyboard, we'll play together or even play on the same piano together, depending on what he or she may be comfortable with. So I expect that... I think the band's going to play a few things on their own, then I'll come out and play a lot of my music, but certainly I want it to be an interactive experience for the students.
Well, a lot of people looking forward to that interaction, and it looks like you'll be playing around 11 of your compositions for that concert.
We've got an ambitious mm-hmm. evening planned.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Well, good. Well, we'll look forward to that, and we'll continue announcing it, and we'll be speaking with Dr. Hockepel about the concert and how people can attend and get involved.
That's the thing. Sorry to interrupt, no. But see, the people like Dr. Hockepel are on the front lines of this movement. And when I call it a movement, I talk about the rescuing of our culture. And I mean, I was at the Grammy Awards 2 weeks ago, and I was sitting there, my wife and I were sitting there, we had good seats right there on the floor, and we were just beat down by what we were hearing. Incredible production values, you know, fire and lasers and water effects and everything, and such a lack of any basic musicality that it's a lot of personality, a lot of emotional commitment from the artist there. And there were some really good things, but there were some things that were shocking in terms of what was missing. And, of course, jazz and classical music are never going to be on that program. I mean, they had a quick little Dave Brubeck tribute by Chick Corea, but not much else. And so the key to changing that is right in the schools. You know, and people, not like me, because I'm involved in it, you know, a couple days a week, but not Huckleberry is there every day. Mm-hmm. And people like him and people like my piano teacher. People at the middle school level that are really dealing, you know, with trying to, you know, get installed the love of this music with the young people. So, and every year, you know, the new crop of kids come in and they start over again. So I have such great respect, you know, for the educators that are doing this. And so it's, you know, it's my pleasure to come in and spend a little time with them.
Well, we have so much respect for them here as well. And I know many of them will be bringing their students on Saturday, March 2nd, to hear the concert. And, of course, some of the high school bands will be working with you as well. My guest, Gordon Goodwin, by telephone from Los Angeles. He is the founder and leader of the Big Fat Band, a wonderful group. You can hear or see them on YouTube all over the place. And probably your child has already listened to him. So, Gordon, we look forward to having you here in person in Lafayette on March 1st and 2nd, and we appreciate you taking a moment out of your busy schedule to talk to us in advance.
Hey, that's my pleasure, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody next week.
Thank you so much, Gordon.
Okay, bye.